Have you tried changing your health year on year, resolving that this year things are going to be different, but nothing seems to change? Oftentimes, when things are not changing, we are following many wellness myths and not looking at the full picture, including our nutrition, recovery, stress management, leaving out mind-body connection. I want to introduce you to Wellness Redefined, a new podcast from Rufilion Media that's here to dispel all your myths about wellness and fitness while sharing stories of how we redefine what it means to be healthy. On each episode, we'll be talking to experts from all walks of life who will share their own unique wellness journey and offer their perspective. I am your host, Tamika Rochester, founder and CEO of Harlem Cycle, a premier wellness space in New York City with a focus on indoor cycling. I've been an advocate for wellness since as early as I can remember. So if this sounds like something that could help change your life, go ahead and pause the show you're listening to and subscribe to Wellness Redefined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Inclusive Collective Podcast. I am your co-host, Nadia Butt, and I am joined with Rob Hadley.
Hello, Nadia.
Rob, it's our last episode of season one.
It is. Sadly, I need a break.
For me? Do you need a break for me, Rob?
Is there a last? But there will be future episodes, right? I think you should make that clear.
Oh,
Am I going to be on season two? I wasn't clear on that.
I'm not going anywhere without you, Rob. You will be on season two. You
Excellent.
Made the cut.
Excellent. My tryout ended.
Yeah. So I thought, just to kind of, I guess, to wrap up season one, I could continue with me asking you a question.
Okay.
So what is something that you bring with you everywhere and anywhere you go?
I bring with me like a physical item?
Yeah. Don't be like my mind.
My
sense of
my executive
humor.
Presence.
Yeah.
Executive presence, right? That's what you're looking for.
Yeah, no.
I'm confused. Things
anything,
I like
a, when you leave the house.
Yes. Okay, so
what is something that you and don't say
phone
and your keys. Don't
wallet,
say
wallet, sunglasses. No, sunglasses.
Sunglasses.
I wear sunglasses, yeah, because
it's very sunny in Utah.
It's so sunny. It's so bright out. Yeah. Within my wallet, I have like this this charm that
a picture
I think my
of me.
Wife encouraged me. Yeah, exactly. Remember when we used to have wallets with pictures?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, that was so fun. We have those now. It's called my phone. There's like a little, it's like a little Catholic charm, I think, that my wife either like encouraged me to have, and it's like for luck or wealth or something
that's
like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so I keep that with me.
Oh, that's good. That's bringing you good fortune. I like that.
I'm not sure it does, but yeah, that's the idea. That's what it's supposed to do.
Yeah. Do you want to know what I bring everywhere with me?
What do you bring everywhere?
You're going to die. My selfie stick.
Your selfie stick. Okay.
Yeah, I'm like kind of known amongst my friends to have this like little backpack instead of a purse, I have like a little backpack so I can fit like my water bottle, my wallet, my phone, and my selfie stick is in there. And so I'm known in family circles and friend circles to pull out the selfie stick and take a selfie or two.
Nice. How long have you had this?
Well, I had the original one probably, I don't know, like 7 or 8 years ago. Then I upgraded my phone, so I had to get a Bluetooth one. So I've had it for a few years.
So the Brazilian, the Portuguese word for selfie stick is pau de selfie, right? Pau de selfie.
Pau de selfie.
And so I had like these unusually long arms. And so instead of carrying a selfie stick, I'm always designated, like Juliana, my wife, will be like, Rob, pound your selfie. Pound your selfie.
Yeah.
Right. Take this.
Like
so
motion
I
you
hold
to
it
take
out.
The
yeah.
picture.
Yeah. Use your extremely long arms
that
to
is
take this picture. So
fantastic.
I carry one of those too. It's just, it's just
I love
appended
that.
To
it's
me.
Your arm.
Yeah. It's an appendage. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you for playing along. So we are at the final episode and we do not have a guest, but we wanted to offer our con reflections. Basically, the last since mid season
halftime show,
since the halftime show, and so we were gonna do like a rapid fire kind of like what are your three takeaways, right? Should I go first?
And also, neither of us know what the other's going to say. That's the important thing.
Huge surprise.
Yeah, exactly. So.
So my very first was, I did a lot of thinking around this. The difference between reflection and introspection.
Okay.
And I know we call this section, like we're calling this episode Calm Reflections, right? Like we do Calm Reflections, which is kind of this, what's the word when you join two words together?
Conjoined term, yes.
Oh, when you conjoin terms. We conjoined conversations and reflections. And I was reminded by our guest, Muhammad Anwar, episode 15, that there's actually like a subtle yet distinct difference between reflections and introspection. So reflection is when you think or you write about something or you give something serious thought to something, particularly maybe in the past. And in the context of DEIB, so, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, it could be reflecting on like a particular behavior or action that maybe you demonstrated in a meeting or an email that was sent with, you know, not the best tone, or maybe an interaction you had with someone that went sour. So so in terms of reflection, you think about it, you're giving it some serious thought, thus reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Introspection is kind of the second tier or second layer. It's when you're examining your emotions, your thoughts, and your feelings by asking yourself questions. And I think there's a lot of power in doing introspective work when you're talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Introspection comes after you've reflected, and now you're asking yourself some really deep questions. So maybe it's questions that are like, could I have handled that meeting differently? How could my tone have sounded differently in that email? Or how could I have engaged with those colleagues differently? Right.
So is it more focused on actions? Are the questions that you're taking leading to some actions and behavioral changes that you can make?
So that is the third piece that I think we abstractly have talked about, but I don't think we're putting like a label on it. And I'm not entirely sure what this label is, but it is this point where you've done some reflection. Now you've asked some questions and, you know, some emotional questions, introspective work. And now you're mindful and you're at a point where you have to make some sort of decision or course correct. And oftentimes I think that is like either sharing your reflections, sharing your lessons learned,
mm-hmm.
or maybe seeking apologies or seeking to understand, right? Mm-hmm. You're seeking mm-hmm. more understanding. So for example, like, do you want to reach back out to those people that you emailed or engaged with and offer your reflections, maybe apologize, you know, if you felt like you did something wrong. So there's this level of humility, I think, built in, and accountability to your own actions and behaviors and even mindsets. But I think this takes not only a lot of energy and time, but work.
Right, right.
And I think Muhammad shared his journey with us. And I am certain that for him, this was a humbling experience because he was able to share it with us. So again, that was my first takeaway. What are your reactions to that?
I love it. I think we should, I think we should still call our episodes Calm Reflections,
sure.
instead of Calm Respections, which has been on the table. But I love that. And I think that it's almost like it's the final step, right? I mean, I think we're always talking about that's the most important thing, is that we're trying to modify behavior. We're trying to, like, what are the things that we can do within organizations in order to create the environment that is inclusive, and that mm-hmm. that always comes with changes in behavior, right? And I think that assuming that these behaviors need to be changed, which they most often do, because we're all learning and getting better at these things. So I love it. I think it was really helpful, and I love that distinction, and I will definitely pay more attention to it myself.
And there's a level. Sorry, there's also like this level of, when I talk about humility, what I mean is really understanding that you have to let go of being defensive. You have to let go of your ego. And Muhammad talked about that, right?
Yeah.
And so that's, anyways, what was your first one?
Let's go
to you.
Wow, that was so good. I think I'm going to redo mine. I'm going to start over. That's it for Inclusive Collective. All right, so let's talk about role modeling and experimentation. This came from our conversation with Steve Arntz of Campfire, right? So he talked about role modeling and some of the intentional things that he was doing to make sure that his employees were taking time off. And he told this funny story about how they had a mandatory day off and he secretly worked the entire day. And then he had to admit to his co-founders that he was working. And he said something interesting as I went back and listened about the anxiety from not working, which I think is very real for founders. Think about our founders in the audience, right? So especially at the earliest stages, there's always something to do. There's massive amounts of work, right? I mean, you started from scratch. Everything has to be done, literally, right? And so, you have these talented people. They're very driven. And they can always be working. And so the question or the conflict is really the amount of work required to start a company hasn't changed, but the expectations from your workers has changed, I think, in the last couple of years, especially since the pandemic, in terms of wanting to be in environments that are, that are focused on their well-being as well. So, HBR, and the stress has been at an all-time high, right? So HBR reports that in 2021, 67% of workers reported that stress and burnout has increased since the start of the pandemic. So that tension is just very real, I think, in the startup environment. And so founders and companies are experimenting with all different types of alternatives to the typical work week and to time off. And one of the things we touched on was the 4-day work week. I think New Zealand has actually gone to this. I think New Zealand, some of our listeners in New Zealand can let me know if I'm wrong on this, but I think that everywhere in New Zealand is 4-day work week.
I absolutely love Jacinda, by the way.
Yeah, very progressive. Yeah. And some companies are doing it in the summer. But one thing I would say is, it's not all that it's cracked up to be based on some of the research, right? So logically, think about it. Like, the amount of work you're doing doesn't go away. It's just you're cramming it in taking the same amount of stuff and cramming it in a smaller box, right? And so what you get is that workers are not reporting less stress. They're working on their days off, And so I think as a founder, if this is something that you're thinking about doing, if you're trying something along these lines, it's important to role model, which is what Steve had talked about, because you can't expect your workers to take that big of a change seriously if you're not doing it yourself, of course. But then also don't sell it as an answer to to their well-being issues or whatever. It's like, think about it as an experimentation and sell it as such and then make adjustments and just be open to the fact that it may not solve all of your problems.
I love that.
All right, Nadia, next one. Number two for you.
So speaking of human-centric approach in leading, particularly I want to talk about mentorship versus sponsorship. Okay. So you talked about role modeling, which is kind of similar to mentorship and applies in some ways to sponsorship. But Melissa, if you recall, Melissa Cordo, episode 9, touched upon this really crucial element of mentorship. So, getting the right coaching and advice from people that have had maybe previous experience, particularly in your industry, can be really invaluable. I remember her saying something more eloquently than what I had just said. And then Senna for Mendoza, episode 14, she talked a lot about this too, and having to foster and build trust between you and the person you're providing that coaching with, and if there's really not trust there, then how receptive are folks to feedback? So, we also heard from Rachel Shepard, episode 13, and Abed Siddiqui, episode 11, where they advocate for mentorship relationships in their accelerator programs.
Right.
So this idea of seeking guidance, networking, seeking knowledge from someone more experienced is a key element for anyone wanting to develop. So that's mentorship. Now let's switch to sponsorship. So I am reminded by Steve Arntz again, episode 16, and Priscilla Redman, episode 17, they offer that it's this idea of sponsorship is elevating those that are different from you. So if you're in a room and you have power, maybe it's power in your role or power within the company, you elevating the voiceless or the underrepresented, that's sponsorship. And this is not just making room for them at the table. it's giving them an opportunity to have power, be developed, to grow. And I absolutely love this idea of sponsorship, because we all have this responsibility in our own communities and in the workplace, if we have any sort of power, to really elevate those that don't. That really offers more opportunities professionally, personally, and can help build equity into the system. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm glad you, obviously, several guests have mentioned both of these concepts. I'm just thinking and thinking out loud here is obviously sponsorship is so crucial and probably more rare than mentorship, right? So even companies forever have had, hey, let's have a mentorship program, and here's an hour you get to meet with someone once every couple of months, and you may be like blind introduced to someone and maybe not necessarily have the level of trust necessarily needed to actually create some real value for either of the people in that situation. But then I think that sponsorship can just be so much more powerful. And the only thing I would say is, the thing that was running through my head was, I think that sometimes what we see is sponsorship being directed towards those that look a lot like us. So even white women who have, joined the upper ranks of organizations will pull along or focus on other white women. And so one thing I would just say is that, so it's just, there's an opportunity to be really intentional about bringing people that are not necessarily like you and elevating them and making that sponsorship, right? Like sponsorship in its best and most interesting and productive form.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. What's your second one?
You're going to kind of laugh at me. So my second one is
Rob, I laugh at you anyways.
My second one is venture capital. No,
What does that mean? Blanket statement.
So I'm talking about venture capital. So I'm combining a lot of guests into that point. You mentioned some of them, Abed Siddiqui of Barda.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Abed.
I think the important thing is that he speaks for Joe Biden. Is that that's the important takeaway.
So he's going to kill Rachel us.
Shepard of Mars Ventures, Molly Lev of Remarkable US, and Jennifer Mendoza of Mendoza Ventures. So they're all great, fantastic guests. Thank them so much. They're either VCs or VC adjacent, right? Like in the accelerator world. And you think about, well, these people are great. And then you look at the VC representation numbers that we've talked about several times. I'm not going to go into them. Mm-hmm. And you just think, okay, my God, like these things don't add up, right? And so, these aren't the only VC people I know. I've worked with, right? So I'm feeling bad because we paint this caricature that we just beat on throughout this process of venture capitalists. And I think that these are some of the most, some of my friends that are in this industry are some of the most thoughtful, intentional people. Obviously the ones that we talk to, and because they're developing some really interesting models in order to increase representation, both for venture capitalists and investors and for founders and entrepreneurs as well. And so there's a ton of interesting innovation in that space itself. And so I wanted to talk about that and think about that. And then the thing I want to dig in as we go into season two is I think we need to talk to more investors and venture capitalists. And I'm really excited to do that because I feel like I need to learn more about that industry and why there's such a disconnect between what I see on a day-to-day basis in terms of the folks that I know and the numbers that you see, which are just, tragic in many ways. Right. I need to learn more is my takeaway.
Rob, I also just want to call out too. I think a little bit more about this world than I do. And what I've gathered and learned is that I definitely have formed assumptions about not only the startup world, but now venture capitalists. And I, because of the numbers and even just hearing some of the stories, right? Like you said, those tragic kind of unfortunate situations that either founders or entrepreneurs have gone through to get funding, but then also just talking to people like Jennifer who are really trying to kind of dismantle that system. And so I want to call out the fact that we even are, I'll use I statements. I have biases in understand in this world, and I want to learn more so I can untangle that and not create these, you know, massive gross assumptions about a group of people like venture capitalists or, you know, or investors. I do know there are great investors out there that are looking for good. We talked to one of them. And so looking to do good, make the world a better place. And I do believe there are more people out there that are looking to do it, and they may just not have the resources or people available to them, but call us. Call us if you want to, you know, do better and be better. But
awesome.
Yeah. I just want to call out that bias.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk to more. Season 2, let's do it. We're going to dig into a little bit more. Not 19 episodes of it, but we're going to dig into a little bit more.
Right, great.
All right.
All right.
Last one for you.
So my third? Yeah. So I want to talk about this concept of dimensions of diversity. So we were so lucky to have such a broad, diverse group of guests on our podcast for season 1, right? We had people representing many underrepresented communities and founders who are advocates and allies for more. They're advocates for more representation and better inclusion. And so I want to just touch upon this notion of dimensions of diversity. So, you know, we have said throughout season 1, and as I've reflected over the course of season 1, I want to bring back this, I want to bring attention back to it. And more specifically, I want to thank Molly Leavitt, episode 12.
Great.
Because the disabilities community is one community that I have much more learning to do around. And after we spoke to her, I went on different websites like Remarkable, where she works, the American Psychological Association. I think I told you about that in our Calm Reflections in that episode, and learned words that have evolved. Mm-hmm. And I really encourage others to do more research, like insensitive language or how we can better advocate for people living with disabilities. So that's kind of the first thing. And then, you know, so getting back to kind of the dimensions of diversity and language, I see this a lot with using the term diversity and how it's defined. So at the individual level, I would say that a person in it of it themselves cannot be diverse. Right. I think I said this before, but I'm going to reiterate it. They can have a person can have a diverse background and diverse skill sets and abilities, but a person cannot be a diverse person.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They can add to a diverse team. And the reason why I'm saying this is because, one, at the end of the day, everyone has differences. Even you, Rob, you have differences. Oh, you're not like every single straight white man.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think we have to stop using this term or these terms, diverse candidate, diverse hire. When you use this language, it just continues to perpetuate that the standard or the norm is the straight, cisgendered white male.
Yep.
And I don't want to be known as a diverse candidate or a diverse hire. I'm a human being. I want to, you know, I have different perspectives and I have different capabilities and skills, you know, so I really encourage people to start using terms like that they're looking for a candidate to build a more diverse team or more diverse group. And if you have kind of a hard understanding, if you have a hard time understanding kind of those differences or those dimensions of diversity, I would encourage you to look up Marilyn Loden, her work on the diversity model. It's a great model that outlines kind of how you think about the different dimensions of diversity, what makes us all unique, how we might identify ourselves and the intersectionality of all of that. So I feel like I was on my soapbox for a moment, let's stop grouping people into the social stereotypes again. So that's.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks. I really appreciate those two points there. Disabilities or the people with disabilities front, I think I mentioned in there that this is something that I have, learned a lot from Molly and then in subsequent research as well, it being an area that I have to educate myself a lot more about. And I had also looked at some of the terms that so many of the common terms in our everyday language that are designed to put people down, but they are based on things that, you know, they're derived from some sort of derogatory term with regard to people with disabilities. And so mm-hmm. I encourage everyone to take a look at those lists and try to, and I, this is something I, you know, tons of words in my, you know, in just our everyday language and things that we say that, you know, that obviously have a connotation, which we're not necessarily aware of. And so I think it's a great thing to go look at those resources and try to think about what you're saying and what the impact it could have on someone from that community. And then I also totally agree on the diverse hire, diverse candidate, diverse person front. I was doing a piece of work recently where I was categorizing, right, sort of doing big piece of data work and data analysis, and we were categorizing and grouping things into categories. And I had, just because it was the company was using that diverse hire, and so mm-hmm. Just as a you know, category for certain things that we were doing, and you know, and so just, you know, through the work that you and I have done together, the conversations that we're having, I was like I can't necessarily, I don't really like that categorization,
that phrase.
So I don't think that that's something that we want to be using going forward. So I'm with you on that one.
What's your third? Your last and final.
The last one.
Season one.
The last one. Let love rule, I say.
Oh, look at that.
Have you ever been to a Lenny Kravitz concert and watched Lenny Kravitz sing Let Love Rule live?
Like, no, but tell me more, because I feel like you have.
Fantastic experience. Okay. Everyone's holding hands, singing together, the whole crowd's, you know, talking about love.
Like lighters in the air.
So in our conversation with Muhammad Anwar of Softway, I thought about Let Love Rule the whole time, right? So author of Love is a Business Strategy.
Look at my shirt. Can you read it, Rob?
It says, I love inclusion and donuts. Yes, agreed. Agreed on both counts.
Courtesy of my friend Jen.
So there was a couple things. I listened to Muhammad's episode again, and things that are particularly relevant to founders, and just want to emphasize as I can. You know, obviously, if you call it love or humility or business at the speed of trust or leadership effectiveness, which is not that interesting or fun of a way to categorize it, or whatever, you know, or inclusion, right? So Muhammad said that people need to be free to show up and give and receive feedback without repercussion or to be themselves. And that's how you unlock innovation, and that's how you unlock efficiency. And I think about some of the work that I've done previously, and just to drive this home, if people don't feel included, or to use Muhammad's word, that there's a genuine interest in them, love in their organization, they will not tell you that you have problems. They will certainly won't tell you what the problem is. They won't tell you if you're about to make a mistake or do something that's not going to be impactful or effective mm-hmm. and the right thing for your company. They will not tell you that they have a better idea how to do certain things, right? So so it's important for the founder, but it's also important for leaders in any company or organization to really listen to what Muhammad's saying there, that inclusion, or in deference to Muhammad, we'll call it love, is the unlock, right? So anyone who thinks that this is soft stuff, enjoy not solving problems, right? Enjoy not being innovative. Enjoy, being lapped by your competitors who are building inclusive companies, right? So this is the unlock for innovation and efficiency in organizations. Only your invested and included employees are going to help you solve your biggest problems and build great products and great companies going forward.
Yeah, I heart that.
You love it.
I love it.
Love it.
No, that was great. That was great. Thank you for sharing that.
Cool. So, you know, one final kind of reflection for you, Nadia, and I think it's important, in the context of the discussion in the summer, and we've talked about some of the things that have happened over the summer as well. You know, we talk about the entire, and we look back at the entire season, and we have talked to some of our guests off air. I don't know, is it called off air on a podcast?
Yeah, offline, off air, off pod. Yeah,
off the record. We're not really journalists. But, you know, about the impact of the Supreme Court decision in Dobbs, which effectively reversed Roe versus Wade and will deny access to abortion care for women in a majority of states. And I just thought that in the context of this show, you know, as we've spoken to a number of female founders in the last several weeks, and we know how difficult it is to start a company as a woman. We know the barriers that women face in business in general, but also certainly in that entrepreneurial space as well. We know the stats on the low level of investment that women-funded companies get. And we've heard from our friends that have joined us, you know, they're particularly knowledgeable in this area, that this mm-hmm. decision will just make it that much harder. That mm-hmm. all the progress that women have seen, which some may feel is not enough to start with, mm-hmm. as founders and entrepreneurs and investors, that will be eroded. And in the context of the industry we're discussing, you know, this is a real tragedy, in my opinion. And mm-hmm. That's, of course, nothing to say the disproportionate impact that this decision will have on women of color and women of mm-hmm. limited economic means, for whom this ruling, I think, will be even more damaging in terms of economic progress. So,
agree.
So that's, I think it's important to point that out. I don't know. And, you know, obviously, mm-hmm. if you don't have any space for this right now, given all the things that have happened, then, you know, certainly don't need to comment. But I thought that was important just in the context of the work that we're doing.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. I'm still processing this decision. Obviously, as you probably know, just, yeah, speaking to our guests, but also just, you know, speaking to family members, speaking to friends, it impacts definitely Black and POC women far more than anyone else. 1 in 4 women in America make this decision in their, you know, it's a very deeply personal decision for folks, and it's a healthcare decision. So I have less rights today than I did a month ago, and I think every woman is processing that. Additionally, though, it impacts families, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So I have this conversation with my sister, who's a lawyer, does a lot of work kind of in the social good aspect. And, you know, she says that this will affect other rights based on privacy, mm-hmm. and that could include things like birth control, IVF, gay sex, and gay marriage, and could very well include things like interracial marriage. So people like my brother and sister-in-law and you, Rob.
Right, right.
And so it's just another way of showing who belongs and who doesn't belong. I have other kind of thoughts and maybe we can talk about it in season 2 as I kind of continue to process, but I do have thoughts about this very, to me, very Christian-based decision in a country that is supposed to separate church and state. And, you know, I identify as Muslim, and I do feel like these are impeding on my religious freedoms. I also believe in experiencing joy during times of high stress like this. And so to those folks that are, you know, needing to rest and refuel, do that, but we have to keep fighting. We have to keep activating. And so if that means donating to abortion funds, I would encourage you to do that. Volunteer for groups that help protect our rights, like the ACLU or NAACP. Register to vote. Like I don't know what you do during election time or even outside election time, Rob, but I write a lot of postcards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I help donate to a lot of campaigns, people that I believe in. And then I try to experience joy in between that, because we have to fight for the next 50 years to get back kind of the right that we lost.
Right, right. I think that's a sobering, that's what we're dealing with, a multiple year effort really to win back equality under the law for women, right? And so, I think that's the right mindset, that it's going to take a little bit, and that there's 1,000 things we can do. I'm in a state here in Utah, which had trigger law that went into effect this past week, and so I think that you know, there's going to be a ton of funds that are available. I think obviously recurring donation to Planned Parenthood is a very mm-hmm. important and positive step. Electing representatives that should have been a focus for a long time, frankly. It's one of the things that's really a gut punch to me to think about the fact that, you know, 52% of white women supported Donald Trump in the 2016 election. And that is a big part of why we have this decision at this point. So mm-hmm. I think bringing it back to the context of people leading companies, right? So you know, one thing that I think the founders are doing right now, you know, so we talk a lot about workplace equality and equity, and mm-hmm. that really cannot exist in a when half and over half of the workforce in our country does not have mm-hmm. equal rights under the law, right? And so I think that right. I encourage all the founders, you know, that are men. Obviously, the women are probably thinking about this right now, but to think about what type of company they want to have and how, you know, what kind of company they want to build, thinking about how their actions in the next coming months and years will impact over half of the workforce that they have and over half of the workforce that they want, and then definitely over 50% of the customers that they want as well. So you name some of the rights that could also be eroded, and so it really impacts almost everyone in a negative way, whether you see it or not at this point or not.
Right. Well, we're going to end on that.
We're going on a break. We're coming back. Yes. We're coming back in like probably around early September. There'll be more announcements there. What are we doing? Yeah. What are you looking forward to this summer, the rest of the summer?
That is a great question. I have a dissertation to write. So I will be spending time in a library writing the dissertation and experiencing joy with some of my classmates. What will you be doing?
I just got back at a 60 plus hour trip back from Brazil. And so I'm so tired of traveling right now. So I'm just going to hang out in Utah, enjoy, you know, watch the Great Salt Lake dry up from my view here, you know, just try to enjoy being outside and get some sunshine.
That's great. Yeah. So we will definitely be back in September, folks. Please stay tuned. In the interim, if you enjoyed this episode and want to listen to other episodes, if you haven't already, go ahead, subscribe, rate, review our podcast. We would love to get your feedback and your reviews. Share with your friends. If you do have any questions for us, email us at info@refilia.com. Check us out on Instagram at Inclusive Collective Podcast, all one word. Check us out on LinkedIn. You can follow us there. Inclusive Collective is produced by Refilion Media. Thank you to all of our guests for season one. We appreciate you. I'm Nadia Butt.
And I'm Rob Hadley.
We'll see you next season.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.